My name is Dr. Mahmood Khan. I'm the Vice Chairman and Chief Scientific Officer of PepsiCo.
You began your talk by saying, if nothing changes, we have a problem. What's the reference there, and what do you mean by that?
So it's actually pretty simple mathematics. If you look at the world's population today, we have about 7 billion people. The projections by most experts is that by 2050, we'll have about 9.5 billion people living on the planet. About 70% of that population will live in cities. And so we're going to have an increase in the population by about 30%. We have no increase, obviously, in agricultural land that's available to grow food between now and 2050. And water resources, if anything, have been diminishing in terms of fresh water. And of course, as most people in the conference know, about 80% of fresh water use on the planet today is for agriculture. So if you do combine all of those things, if we continue to grow, consume, and distribute food the way we're doing it today, we won't have the resources to meet the needs of another 2 billion humans. Remember, there's about a billion people on the planet already who are hungry.
You pointed out that consumers want transparency. We hear more and more about that. How do you deliver that to them?
So consumers are asking, when they talk about transparency, just so we're clear, they're asking for everything from what's in the product in terms of ingredients. They want to know the sourcing, where it came from. They want to know the impact on the environment. They want to know what was used in the processing and in the agricultural process itself. They want to know the location of where it was grown. When you put all of that together, consumers are demanding essentially transparency on the entire supply chain. We start with, of course, providing the information on our labels, on our websites, so that it's clear what the composition is and how and where we're sourcing, where it's feasible. There are some ingredients, like, for example, if you take vegetable oil, it can come from multiple sources, and it comes through our suppliers that gather it from sometimes from thousands of farms. So it's impossible to trace it to an individual farm or an individual location. We also provide a lot of information on our website, but ultimately we make commitments around our sourcing practices, our environmental footprint, and our impact of our total end-to-end operation. And that's what has really changed in the recent past, and that is the fact that we're looking at the food and beverage impact from the farm itself all the way to the fork.
You had pointed out that there was a cut in water usage by half, also a cut in nitrogen, but yet an increase in yield in 4.5 years. Was that in reference to PepsiCo's suppliers or to PepsiCo itself? What were you referring to?
Yeah. What I was referring to, you remember when I spoke, I was speaking about our commitment by 2025. We want to reduce our water footprint by, I'm checking with Andrea here, but 20% across our entire supply chain, not just 20% within our own operations, but from the farm all the way through, which means we make a significant impact outside our four walls. So in order to evaluate how feasible that was, we actually kicked off a pilot study where we looked at potato farmers that are farming for us and supplying potatoes to us in the southeast of England. And in that pilot, we said that in this part of England, what we want to do is demonstrate that this is actually possible. And the project there was to use all available technologies and all the best practices. We collaborated with the University of Cambridge in England and local technology companies to deploy existing technologies, existing practices, and we demonstrated in that in just under 5 years that water use was reduced by 50%. We reduced the carbon footprint, but also had a slight increase in yield, so it did not come at the expense of yield. So it was a true win-win for the farmer, lower input costs, and an improvement in yield at the same time.
And I'm
that's what I was referring to.
Okay. And I'm sorry, did that not include the nitrogen, as I had mentioned?
Yes, we looked at nitrogen, and we saw a reduction in nitrogen use. I can't remember what the impact there was.
Okay.
I can't remember that off the top of my head.
Okay.
The primary goal was to reduce water use, and of course, at the same time, not increase, but we actually reduced nitrogen use.
I thought it was interesting that you envision plant-based packaging, and you're working with Nestle and Danone. Tell me about that.
So we just announced this week an alliance called a Natural Alliance, which we have joined. The other members include Nestle, they include Danone, and of course us. And our goal is to develop plant-based packaging to take agricultural output from a variety of sources, which then can be converted through processing to a plastic material, which then can be used, for example, to replace oil-based PET, and in essence, a bioplastic. Our ultimate goal, of course, is to have a complete circle, which is to start with plant material, convert it to plastic, and ultimately that plastic then either can be decomposed, recycled, or becomes biodegradable, depending on the technology we have, and create a virtuous cycle. But A, it reduces our dependence on oil. Second, it has a much better carbon footprint. And third, it has the potential to use our agricultural output for other uses. What would be really exciting if we can get that far is to actually use our agricultural waste stream as inputs to convert. And so you increase the value of the agricultural output, both value financially, but also value in terms of its usability and therefore environmental impact.
Would this be similar to or parallel to what they're making from corn starch-based plastics?
Yeah. So all the technologies that are currently available can convert, for example, in the example you're giving, corn-based starch into a partial bioplastic, but they can't go past about 30%. So the other 70% or so is still dependent on oil in order to do this. This is very different in two very important ways. I personally don't believe that we should be converting food-grade products into plastic. You know, that the notion of food to plastic does not make sense. As given what we just talked about into the future, when there will be greater and greater demand for food. But we have to find alternative sources of what you call carbon, which is coming from agricultural output, that is not usable for food. That may be waste products, it may be cover crops, but something else. That's one important difference. The second is this is to go all the way to 100% bioplastic, not one-third bioplastic.
The Midwest Row Crop Collaborative, you talked about that during your speech. What is that?
So the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative is, as stated, it's a collaboration where, what our goal is, let's state the problem. Most people have read that the Gulf of Mexico has a dead zone. And this dead zone, and this dead zone, which is stated to be about the size of New Jersey, is a consequence of nitrogen and fertilizer runoff, which is coming from the upper Mississippi, of course, the Midwestern states where intensive row crop and grain farming occurs. And as there is consequences of that runoff, you end up with loss of the biodiversity and life along the Gulf states. So obviously we've not seen progress on this between state or federal governments, and we took it upon as a private sector to come together. And I mentioned several collaborators in this on the industry side, which included suppliers like Cargill, of course PepsiCo, General Mills, Kellogg. And then what was interesting is also major retailers like Walmart. We combine this with, important thought leaders and nonprofit organizations like the Nature Conservancy, and I mentioned several others. And so this collaboration has come together to say, what can we do in this end-to-end, from the farming sector to the product producers to the retailer, that can identify and implement and work with farmers to improve practices which reduce the application and the runoff of the inputs to farming, like fertilizer, so that A, it's not wasted, B, it doesn't have a negative impact on the environment, and C, you then do not end up with the impact that you've seen in the Gulf of Mexico. And I think it's an excellent example of public, private, and you know, as we work with government and the farmers, of everybody identifying the problem and coming together to find the solution, not only to identify it, but actually implement it. And that is the goal.
Finally, you mentioned this, speaking about the need or the demand for natural products. You ask, what is natural? What is your answer to that?
I don't know. As I said in the, you know, I'm a scientist. I've spent 3 decades as a scientist. And this is one of those, you know, how do you define natural? It depends who you ask. And so everybody is now, you know, has their definition of natural. And, you know, without some standardization, which is, you know, my challenge that I posed at the meeting was, we need government to convene, regulators to convene, bring the experts together, and come up with a workable definition that everybody can live with. And while it won't be perfect, it will get us all on the same page. It doesn't have to be my definition. It doesn't have to be industry definition, but a definition that is acceptable to credible, knowledgeable people so that we can all work with it. Without that, the worst-case scenario was we end up with 50 states having 50 definitions, and can you imagine the consequences of such a fragmented environment at a time when we're trying to make nutritious food more available to more people at affordable prices? You know, breaking up and having, you know, 50 different definitions and different labeling systems and all the rest is only going to add cost and process at a time when consumers can't afford it.